Cube Podcast for May 2013. I'm Dave, hello.
Are we started?
Yeah.
Oh, hello.
Let's do it.
Hello, I'm David.
I'm Al.
And that's it, three of us.
We're in the projection room, the Cube projection room. This is the ambience of the Cube projection room. It's quite a special place, cables everywhere.
Should we talk about Cube Tours again? We did talk about Cube Tours last.
Yeah, we did briefly.
The first Cube Tour was a couple of years ago when the Arnolfini did the Port City project, which united lots of arts venues across the city. And it was kind of led by Kate Rich, who's an artist based at the Cube. And then it was really, it was about arts organisations, really. It was kind of closed. And this is open to anyone who wants to get involved, although we are sort of specifically approaching similar sort of movers and shakers who would have been at something else before. So everyone moves and shakes in their own way, I guess. So we are trying to buy the building. The Cube community is trying to buy itself. So if you're listening to this podcast, I assume you are part of the Cube community, so you can join in and be part of that.
That, or I've strapped you down to a chair and forcing you to listen to this. In which case, hello, future Alice. Although it wouldn't be present day. Anyway,
I think you're even tied down. You're probably part of the community in some way. In a way.
Somehow a victim of it.
So if you want to find out more about the Freehold, there's a web page you can go to, which is just cubecinema.com/freehold. You can donate there. People have been donating. We're trying to raise the money by the community doing itself, people who are involved and have an attachment to it. We've got about 42,000
at this point.
42,500.
Yeah.
We need to get 185,000. People are donating different amounts. There's sort of thousands, hundreds. Some people are doing smaller amounts. People are doing things sort of by, as their budget allows, across the months, you know, making.
Are the T-shirts, are the money for the T-shirts going to that fund?
Part of the money from the T-shirts will go to the fund. I mean, all the money, I think, after costs. So that people are encouraged to do projects and, you know, put on things or make things or do things.
We do have some other T-shirts.
So if you can't,
Dave and David are both wearing T-shirts. Nothing else on the bottom, unfortunately, but you can wear a T-shirt.
It's warm in here today.
Yeah, it's a little too warm. So if you can't, you know, not everyone has money to spare. If you can't contribute financially, you can contribute in other ways that can generate money or generate interest and so on. So, but if you're listening to this, then now's your chance.
And get in touch. Email freehold@cubecinema.com if you want to get involved in any way. If you've got questions, or look at the FAQ on the website, or generally just get involved. And if we buy the building, it's not a case of a group of people or an organisation or anything is buying the building. It will be for public ownership, essentially. So it will be held by a holding company, but it will be to secure the long-term future of an arts venue in this building. So it's good for everyone. Everyone who's interested in this will benefit, hopefully. So let's buy the building.
And if the Cube Tour sounds like your bag, that's the 2nd of May.
So
you,
if you're listening to this on the 3rd of May, unlucky, but just email us and we can do some more.
That maybe leads on nicely to May the 4th be with you. on the 4th of May, which some people may always refer to as May the 4th on Facebook statuses and whatnot, and post little pictures of Star Wars, we're not showing Star Wars, we're showing Spaceballs, the Mel Brooks cult classic. And what we're going to be doing is we're going to be showing 90 minutes of stand-up from Bristol's Up and Coming. Alex Hoyle is going to be your compere. Many of you may know Alex Hoyle. He's been at the Cube before. He actually won a previous comedy combo. He's pretty big on the comedy scene in Bristol, so you may know him. You get 90 minutes of stand-up, then you get to see Spaceballs, and that is all for £4 or £5. That's part of the comedy combos that we're running, and that should be really fun. We actually have a clip of the last comedy combo, which you can listen to here.
When I did, my father gave me this this name. He also tried to confuse me with what he called words of wisdom. When I was younger, I remember he used to say to me, "Joss, the world is your oyster." And he knew I was allergic to shellfish. He said to me one day, he said, "Joss, don't blow your own trumpet." This was the day before I was auditioning for the school band. He said, "Don't cast aspersions," but he never told me what else you were supposed to do with them. He told me some other stuff as well. I'll remember it in a minute. He told me that one day I would need to bring home the bacon. Then he told me not to make a meal out of it. And I remember one day, quite clearly, he sat me down and he looked at me quite seriously and he said, "Joss, I'm not going to beat about the bush because the wolf's at the door and we're under the cosh. Now, we haven't got time to talk about the monkey on your back or the chip on my shoulder. And we might as well put the elephant in the room to one side because clearly the cat's got your tongue." Now, you may think that we're as different as chalk and cheese, but in fact, we're like two peas in a pod. And I'm as keen as mustard to put all my eggs in one basket and put a rabbit out of the hat before the cat's out of the bag. And at this point, I just stepped up and I said, "Dad, hold your horses. You're talking cobblers. Okay? Now, you're as daft as a brush, but luckily I'm as cool as a cucumber. And I know my onions. Now, the wolf at the door is in fact a wolf in sheep's clothing. So why don't we count that sheep and get 40 winks? And then we'll be happy as Larry. God, we used to drive each other crazy." And we're probably the worst punchline of the night. I'll say goodnight. Thank you very much.
And also, in May, at the end of May, on the 25th, we have another comedy combo. So we're going to be showing 90 minutes of stand-up. Our compere this time is Luke Sargent. We've got some excellent performers. We've got Joshua Sadler coming back. I'm performing, and I'm going to be playing the ukulele. And we're going to be showing Some Like It Hot, which is a masterpiece. Billy Wilder and Marilyn Monroe, Jack Lemmon, Tony Curtis. Just a perfect film, maybe.
So when was Some Like It Hot?
So Some Like It Hot is the 25th of May. Uh-huh. Doors will open at 7:30. Comedians will be on at 8, and the film will be on at 9:30.
Ben Trinkle is doing the exhibition this month.
Ooh, lovely. So, Art on the Walls.
Do you know him? Yeah. He records as Finglebone. But when I looked him up, he'd written a nice blog post about us. This is his conclusion. You can look it up on his blog if you just type in Finglebone. But he concludes by saying, "An incredible experience all round and exactly what I need on a regular basis. Well, maybe a bit earlier to bed and less booze." It always amazes me how different people's attitudes to life can be. I'm from a working class background where my creativity is viewed as some sort of deviant pursuit, borderline mental health issues because I don't wish to leave a conventional life. I make no claim to be some sort of revolutionist. I just want to be able to live in a modest life fueled by my creativeness and the positivity it gives to share with others. Meeting the Cubes has given me the boost I need to keep me going in that direction that it's taken me so long to choose and follow. I raise my glass to you every time. Thank you." So, yeah, there's quite a heartfelt, long thing that concludes that. It's very nice, I thought. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Should we hear from good old Pip and Bags with their 20th Century Cube pick for this month?
What is it this month?
This month it is Johnny Guitar. So if you do come to that, you will see my mum dressed up as a cowboy. So if they don't sell the film to you, if you're thinking, "Oh, I'm not quite sure," then come down for that.
"And who are you?"
"The name, sir, is Johnny Guitar."
"That's no name."
"Anybody care to change it?"
"I hired you to play the guitar.
not insult my customers.
Well, if these are your customers, I'm not so sure I'll take this job.
It's pretty strong talk for a man who doesn't wear a gun.
It's also bad manners.
You must be the dancing kid.
That's the name, friend. Care to change it?
No, I like it. Can you dance?
Can you play?
Yes, we can play. Hi, I'm Pip.
And I'm Bags.
We are 20th Century Cube, representing The Cube, Microplex Cinema, and 20th Century Flix Video Shop. Would you like to say a bit about what 20th Century Cube do, or are you going to assume that everyone knows?
I think everyone knows by now, don't they?
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
In a nutshell, we put on films once a month.
Yeah, that we like, and we think that we should be shown, and probably don't get shown enough.
Yeah.
I think there's probably a good example this month, this month's film, Johnny Guitar, directed by Nicholas Ray from 1954. So, a bit of a curious film, isn't it? I mean...
I'll say.
On a very surface level, it's a Western, and yet I think a lot of Western purists have a lot of difficulty classifying it as a Western. I think someone like Chris Frayling, for example, would probably label it more of a costume drama rather than playing to the traditional Western tropes. It's much more of a melodrama. You can argue maybe it's a woman's picture, even though...
Well, that's it. I was going to say, like, there's an element of sexism in that, isn't it? Like, a Western tends to be a conflict between men, maybe redemption along the line. Melodrama, like what you're saying, like, sort of gets painted with the costume drama brush, which tend to be about conflict between women or desires of women.
Mm.
And this one does buck that trend, possibly.
Yeah. And I think woman's picture, there's kind of a slightly pejorative...
Like, he's just not that into you.
Yeah.
That's a woman's
exactly.
picture.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like Douglas Sirk, wasn't it?
Yeah, Sirkian. Yeah.
Very good. So it's directed by Nicholas Ray, and I think it's important to talk about it in terms of his filmography, because his vision of the world and his filmmaking vision is quite specific, I think, and I don't think you can really interpret the film in any other way other than the Nicholas Ray picture. And I think that's one of the reasons why it feels quite awkward as a Western, but why it's so rich in many other ways. You did a bit of research about Ray. In fact, you studied under V.F. Perkins.
Yeah, Clang.
So,
that's kind of like the worst kind of name dropping. Mm. Dropping names no one's heard of. But Victor Perkins, who's like he's quite a big-time movie critic in the 60s, worked in a magazine called Movie, and sort of wrote a lot about Nick Ray. I think he even tried writing a screenplay with him at one point.
Wow.
In the 60s, and he was a slight Nicholas Ray obsessive, and that sort of rubbed off on me. Sort of went through his back catalogue a bit. And
I think fans of Ray tend to be obsessives as well.
Yeah.
His work lends itself to that kind of real devotion.
Yeah, it's because people don't get it. I guess that's the big appeal. It's like you can put this on in a room full of people, and everyone would just be like, just raised eyebrows, you know, saying, what the fuck is this? Mm. And asking you to put on something else.
And people at the time didn't really get it either. I mean, he did score a number of major hits. I guess he's most well known for Rebel Without a Cause. Maybe some people will have heard of They Live by Night as well. But a lot of his other films maybe weren't received in very, very well, because whilst he was working within very established genres like the Western, thrillers, film noir, the films didn't really, really conform to the standard stereotype of what you'd expect.
No, I mean, they Live by Night was brilliant, sort of film noir movie where, you know, the criminals, it's just like there's a real sensitivity, you know, a sort of vulnerability he brings to these people.
And a lack of cynicism as well. I mean, the world in which they inhabit is very cynical, and yet there's, like you say, a real sensitivity to the main character's plight. You're always siding with them. You're almost always with them as well.
Yeah.
And you really feel that Ray identified with pretty much most of his major protagonists in his films, which really makes them feel a lot more heartfelt and a lot less at a distance from the viewer. And so while, in a sense, that makes them harder to categorise, once you realise that's what he's doing, they feel so heartfelt and so personal that it's almost impossible not to get swept up by them.
Yeah, exactly. Once you get over sort of the weirdness of it, I guess, and you can involve yourself in it, then there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of the big emotional payout for it. I mean, they are sort of movies about the individual, sort of slightly alienated. I think there's quite a famous line in Johnny Guitar where he just says, "I'm a stranger here myself." Mm. And there is this element that that's where your sympathies are going with these underdogs against this slightly sort of slightly cruel face, the cruel face of sort of the mainstream or the majority of these sort of like mobs that sort of try and keep you in place and try and crush your spirit, try and tell you what to do, try and kill your desires, all these things. That and he's very much, you know, on the other side, on your side, in a way it feels.
And those kind of things, I think, are interesting because when you look at They Live By Night and Rebel Without a Cause, they're both films which focus on younger characters. And I think if you're dealing with that kind of thematic concern, very often the idea is that you focus on younger characters because they're more idealistic, and then you can form their character around them being worn down by their circumstances and them coming to terms with reality. And yet, one of the things that's interesting about Ray is that very often he will focus on older characters. Johnny Guitar is a very good example of this. Maybe Robert Ryan in On Dangerous Ground.
Yeah, and The Lusty Men.
Robert Mitchum.
Yeah. And that's quite profound, actually, I think. The idea that, you know, it's almost like a cliche, like you focus on these rebel movies, I guess The Wild One as well, where it's like, what are you rebelling against? And he's like, what do you got? And it's this idea that it's something that you kind of grow out of. And the fact that he makes films about older people still feeling these things.
It creates a different kind of tension, doesn't it? Because once they're older, they're more experienced, but they're still clinging on to those ideals which they clearly have had for a long time.
Yeah.
And then that creates a different level of conflict. It's that you want them to succeed because you can see inside of them that they've still got this youthfulness
in them. It's this imagination and hope. You know, it's really quite moving.
And it's and Ray, as he came to directing, and then obviously as he went on, obviously more identified with these older characters. And he himself, again, really comes through in those films. You can really sense the anguish of the characters within his films. It's very much an anguish that he felt himself. He never really seemed to fit in with anything, whether that be at school. I know he dropped out. He didn't do very well in college.
Yeah, he sort of, I think, lasted at college about a year and then went to work for quite a famous architect, Frank Lloyd Wright.
Yes.
And
then as his career went on and he was working at the major studios, there's this real sense that he really didn't like the studio system. He saw it as a production line, and you get this sense that he was really battling with the system, with producers, to try and get the films that he wanted made, and very often succeeds but very often fails at the same time. And it's what he can kind of sneak in to these very familiar types of film, which makes, again, his filmography very, very interesting and quite unique as well.
Yeah. Talking about sneaking things in, Johnny Guitar does have, like, and one of the most incredible things about it is this sort of, like, very, I guess, sort of overt sexuality to it. I mean, there's nothing on screen, but it's just in your mind the whole time. Like, basically, there's so much conflict in this movie. It's quite an intense sort of claustrophobic movie about conflict between these two women. And it's pretty much all about sex. The whole thing is like either sort of desire fulfilled or desire sort of denied or repressed, and sort of the effects that has in this, you know, sort of quite surreal little town.
And then that also ties in with the kind of the wider theme of the film, which is subtextually looking at the Red Scare and communism. Ray had an association with Elia Kazan, and I think was broadly sympathetic with the Communist Party in America, although he wasn't a card-carrying communist. And a lot of what happens in the film you can see as a very thinly disguised allegory for what was going on in America in the mid-1950s, and in particular in Hollywood, the persecution of people who had certain political sympathies.
Yeah, and I guess that kind of chimes in with like the repression of the individual and sort of this sort of comparing it to sort of repressing sexuality in a way. It's quite a radical idea, sort of bringing the political and bringing it down to a personal level. It's quite profound. I remember like one lecture I had at uni about this movie, and Victor Perkins brought in a copy of Sylvia's Mother by Dr. Hook and played the whole thing before even saying a word. He just put it on, and so we listened to the song, everyone's laughing, and then he stopped it and said, "Yeah, that's this. I want you to listen to that song, because like sometimes you can listen to that song and it make you laugh because it's just so ridiculous and so melodramatic and so overblown. And then another time you could hear it and it'll just reduce you to tears because you just open yourself up to it a little bit and just let it get its claws in you and it'll just destroy you. And that's what, it was sort of like a nice introduction to this kind of movie because, you know, as a younger guy, I was sort of, there's a lot of reluctance to engage with something so melodramatic and so artificial. And then suddenly you kind of click and realise, you know, where that emotion can be found. It's slightly more abstract than your average Hollywood movie.
Yeah. In terms of Johnny Guitar, I think one thing about it is that it is, it marks in Ray's filmography a period when he moved away from kind of what you might call a realism of his films and towards a greater stylization. It's also his first major film in colour, and that really comes through in the visual style. Recurring motif in his films afterwards is the use of colour in a very expressionistic sense to convey both atmosphere and the passions of the characters. You think of James Dean's famous Red Jacket in Rebel Without a Cause. It's really turned up to 11 in Johnny Guitar. You've got these very, very white, puritanical backgrounds, and then on top of that, you've then got these really, really, really colourful, vibrant reds of Vienna's costume, and then the white that she wears later in the film.
There's another nice bit in Rebel Without a Cause where I think it's his like nemesis, James Dean's nemesis. He wears yellow and black sort of stripe, and it was always this sort of the natural predator sort of colour, sort of like the wasp. And sort of this, like, you know, very dangerous colour. And I think Vienna has it in this one as well. There's some big yellow sort of stuff going on.
And there's a lot of sort of animalistic metaphors in the film as well. You can see certain characters are aligned to the natural world. And again, one of Ray's skills was to communicate visually this sense of characters being part of the natural world. And it almost makes the film seem... not part of its time, almost kind of timeless, in that it's almost like myth, Greek myth, maybe.
Well, that's what we were talking about earlier, about what Truffaut said about the movie, where he said it was almost like a fairy tale and slightly hallucinatory. And there is like an element, like a, you know, they are slightly, you know, sort of, you know, they're not quite people. They are sort of the earth, and it's sort of, it's slightly, you know, it does feel quite mythical.
Yeah,
I mean, especially you've got like, you know, underground mines that they hide out in, and there's like secret lairs behind waterfalls.
Yeah, and the rocks are very, very symbolic, and then you've got like water and fire.
Everything just seems alive, and it's sort of, and they're very much part of this landscape. They couldn't really exist anywhere else apart from in this town. You can't really imagine Johnny Guitar like walking into New York City or, you know, anywhere or anywhere that's real.
That sounds like a Rob Schneider film, doesn't it?
Big time. Yeah, so it did sort of mark a watershed of kinds, this film, because it was his second colour film, and it was sort of about mid-career, I guess you could call it.
And his career is kind of riven with contradictions. I think, as we said earlier, there's a sense that he was fighting with the studios, and even after he enjoyed the success of Rebel Without a Cause, he did... still seem to have just incredible troubles with his films. I mean, there's famously, towards the end of his studio career, he was hired to direct these big epics like 55 Days of Peking and King of Kings. And even though you can still sense the artist at work and still sense that he's trying to develop those same thematic concerns that he was interested in, it increasingly seems like hack work, which I think makes him quite problematic to interpret, because you've got that sense of, well, how much is him, how much is stuff that has been forced on him. But I think that's one of the great things about watching Johnny Guitar, is that you really feel like it's all him. He really feels it, and he's very much the author of it, and no one else could have done a film like that.
Yeah.
And then... some of his other films really sort of revolve around that as well. I mean, I guess something like Bigger Than Life is interesting in a similar way. Again, you've got kind of an older character in James Mason, but again feels very disillusioned, very alienated, even though he's in this very, very comfortable surrounds.
Yeah, sort of. I guess it's a similar sort of surrounds as Rebel Without a Cause. It's like, you know, middle class, sort of bourgeois existence.
Yeah.
That one deals with mental illness, I guess. I think it's one of the first films that I saw that dealt with sort of antidepressants and sort of potential psychotic side effects.
Yeah, and again, it's a very, very strange film. Some of it intentionally, some of it not intentionally. I mean, the idea of James Mason as this kind of all-American husband doesn't really quite work. Yeah. But you can still sense that there's a lot of stuff in there that he really wants to get through, and it really does come across really, really well.
I guess another one of his early ones worth checking out would be They Live by Night, which is, that was a really good one. I don't know if you can get it, actually. I think you have to get it on an import or on a torrent.
If you're that way inclined.
It's where you illegally download a movie instead of renting it from your local video shop.
Oh, okay.
They're quite popular.
Sorry.
And that's probably the only way you'll get to see it. So get downloading, kids.
But what does 20th Century Flix have in the way of Nick Ray? We've got In a Lonely Place, which is just fantastic.
Yeah, that's the Humphrey Bogart, Gloria Graham one about screenwriting.
Mm. On Dangerous Ground?
Yeah, we've got that one. Yeah. Savage Innocence. Yeah. That was a really good movie.
That's an interesting sort of way that he went. I mean, we talk about how he was using, in Johnny Guitar, the natural elements of almost the whole other character. But then in something like The Savage Innocence and Wind Across the Everglades, which is another fantastic film, he becomes much more interested in the natural world, I guess emerging from its use in Johnny Guitar. And he's becoming more interested in ethnography as well in those films. And they're really, really fascinating films. Again, not particularly well received. I mean, they were, I think, met with bafflement by audiences.
Yeah, but they're well worth checking out. He's one of the masters. Absolutely. I think it's fair to say. Jean-Luc Godard said it as well.
Mm.
Nicholas Ray is the cinema.
I'm not going to argue with him.
No,
he's a bit one, isn't he?
He speaks better French than me as well. He'd run circles around me. So. But yeah, if you want to come and see Johnny Guitar, we're showing it on the 9th of May at the Cube. It'll start, doors will open about 8 and we'll get going. There might be some entertainments in the bar, but probably just the movie will be enough, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe have a cup of coffee and a cigarette afterwards.
It's all a man needs.
All a man needs. This is Pip signing out.
And this is Bags doing the same.
Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Early in the month, we have a short run on Spirits of 45, which is Ken Loach's latest about the welfare state. A film, I guess, close to many people's hearts. Well, the cube isn't a thing or one view. I guess one thing that
it's
most
a collective.
People,
so it's sympathetic to the idea of collectivism, and of course. I don't know if you heard, but Margaret Thatcher died.
Did she?
Last month. And I think in this film it's very much about 45 and then 79 when she comes into power. So
but
I think it's a really good film to show up Cuba.
I would hope that the people who do our audience, if we have a regular audience, it would be something that they would maybe see this place as a kind of reflective of the subject matter, and therefore might be something that they would want to see in this location. So I would hope we'd get an audience for it. But it's showing Monday the 6th, Tuesday the 7th, and I think Wednesday the 8th as well, and there's a baby cinema on the Wednesday. So there's a ticket out Tuesday as well in there, which is nice. Did you know that hashtag Thatcher is dead is creating quite a controversy in the US because people are reading it as that Cher is dead? I think that Cher is dead.
Yeah.
Which is...
That Cher is dead. Yeah. Yeah. You know that Cher.
Yeah. Not the other one.
The Cher from Clueless, maybe. Well, that Cher.
Yeah.
Not Cher.
She's dead. She's dead to me.
Yeah. It's quite bizarre. Well, there you go. Nothing to do with Spirit.
But no one mistook it for Terry Hatcher. So
no, that's true. It's a blast from the past.
We are welcoming the return of Beacons, Icons and Diacons.
Mm. Oh, yes.
And they are presenting the mental health issue, which is very exciting. So Tom Marshman curates the night. It's been a while since we had the last one. Mm-hmm. And Tom Marshman is a lovely man. And it's going to be...
Is indeed.
Yes, he's lovely. And he's going to be doing a night which is part performance, and then there will be a film. The film is very exciting. They're showing Whatever Happened to Baby Jane, which is Joan Crawford. with Betty Davis, and it's absolutely fantastic. It's terrifying. It's absolutely terrifying. But and the performances between Joan Crawford and Betty Davis are amazing. They genuinely hated each other, and there's a couple of scenes in the films where they get into a fight, and I think Joan Crawford and Betty Davis actually did fight in it. So they, you know,
it's kind of documentary.
It is, yeah, it's a documentary about Betty Davis and Joan Crawford and actually being sisters. But it's beautifully shot, it's black and white, it's gorgeous, it's utterly creepy, and it is a masterpiece, and it should be a really good night, and I'm very excited that Beacons, Icons and Dicons is coming back to us.
And that's certainly an iconic film. I mean, if you haven't seen it, you will have seen the look of it and bits of it.
And it's been parodied in things
I'm
like
sure,
The Simpsons.
Yeah, I'm sure people will know it.
Yeah.
The postman says that's best to do. I've written a letter to Daddy saying I love you.
So that's wonderful. That's going to be on the 24th of May at 7:30.
And the performances are from Timberlina, Miss Annabelle sings, and Tom Marshman's going to redo his Passion of the Pole performance. Ooh. Which is a sort of thing about pole dancing and religion. So,
what else have we got?
Yeah.
Well, Barbarian Sound System.
Yes.
I can speak about.
Studio.
Studio, yes. The Barbarian Sound System. Barbarian is named after Kathy Barbarian. I don't know if you know.
No, I didn't.
Who's worth looking up on YouTube. Used to be when I played vinyl a lot. It was a record that I had to clear the floor and make people go home. It's kind of crazy. Well, she did this record of Beatles covers, sort of operatic, but she'd do sort of vocal gymnastic type, almost like beatboxing or something like that. But it was, if you look it up on YouTube, it's worth it. The film Barbarian Sound Studio, I think, is a really sort of perfect cube film. It's about sound, is one thing. It's a second feature by Peter Strickland, and it's very much about. It's set in the 70s, and it's about the sort of technology. It's about 35mm, and it's about the sound recording and the Foley to make things go. A horror film, the sort of giallo film in the 70s. It wasn't released on a 35mm print, which is bizarre. The soundtrack's by Broadcast, who are a band who played at the Cube several times. The sound's really important, so I think seeing it in the Cube just makes a lot of sense with our whole kind of history of combining film and sound. And it's going to be paired with a short called Yellow, which is described as a neo-giallo. So the giallo films are these Italian horror films, which
things like Bird with the Crystal Flames, and
that kind of thing. Yeah, and
that's excellent, that film.
Yeah. So I haven't actually seen this short, but it's been very well reviewed, and it's only short. And there's a cute connection because the soundtrack is done by Anton. Well, he's currently called Anton Mayov. Anton Mayov, who's someone who's been around for years, used to be in kind of noise terrorist bands in Geisha and My Ambulance is on Fire, and he's currently living in Berlin and doing a sort of Italian disco, Giorgio Moroder type thing that's quite successful. And he scored this film. He's going to be coming back for that, and the director, the producer, and the lead actress. And as well as that, we're going to be doing some live Foley stuff as well.
Lots going on then.
So there's lots going on, and I reckon it will be really busy. I mean, I think we could have shown it for a couple of nights. I think it'll be because it's a good.
Are we showing Yellow first and then Bavarian Sound?
Yes.
Studio.
Yeah.
So Yellow Q&A break film.
I guess I don't know, and I'm not sure. I'm not sure where the Foley bit will come. I'm not sure.
During. People should just be butchering cabbages all the way through it.
So that is the Bavarian Sound Studio with Short Yellow, and that is the 3rd of May. That's a Friday, and we'll be showing at 8 o'clock.
That'll be a good night.
That'll be lovely. I have something that I'm excited about. So we're having a games night at 6:30 on the 12th of May.
Sunday.
We're going to be playing Downfall. We're going to be playing Catan, hopefully. We're going to be... we've got the Wii hooked up to the cinema.
Yeah.
So you can play Wii on the big, really big screen.
That was really nice last time.
It was
time.
Really lovely, yeah.
And those are people who never met each other.
Yeah.
Meeting each other.
Yes.
Which was great. Yeah. Playing for bloody hours as well.
Yeah, it was really funny. And it's just a generally nice night. It's free. Bring friends, make new ones, drink cider in the garden, mm-hmm. maybe have a barbecue, bring me a present because it's my birthday, you know. That kind of thing.
Nice. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I love games tonight.
Yeah, they're fun.
Oh, you can also bring your own board games if you want.
Yeah.
So you're not limited by the stock that we have here. Bring whatever you like.
Yeah, it's just really an opportunity to come down and hang out at the Cube, isn't it, really?
Yeah. Because
you don't have to pay to come in, and there'll be seats everywhere, and you can settle in, and a cup of tea and a chinwag, and yeah.
So, May 12th, free, 6:30.
Lovely.
Be there.
Cool. Should we have some music?
Yeah, we haven't had any music.
We haven't had any music. We'll be right back. So on May the 10th, I think it is.
Yes.
Which is your actual birthday,
isn't it? It is my actual birthday. I believe for...
It is £8.
I have toyed with the idea of making a podcast entirely in a cut-up fashion, like cold cut or something.
You were talking about that a little while ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it would be fun. Make one up from previous
Maybe
ones.
Let's not do an entire podcast, but you could do a set. You could do a
section. Or someone else could. Anyone's listening who wants to remix one and then... Dada Cabaret. That's also quite... That's quite cut up. Or of a Dada influenced... Well, lots of things. Yeah, surrealism and Fluxus and cut-up stuff.
Yes, second of May, that's a Thursday, at 8 o'clock, after the Cube Tour. We have Dada Cabaret with... Oh, lots of words I can't say.
There's a Dutch artist, composer and provocator, Jap Blonk, I think that's pronounced. It's a Dutch... How do you pronounce that? J-double-A-P. Yap Blonk.
Yap Blonk.
Sedated by a Brick. We'll be doing some radical theatre.
And we've got Zuleika.
Zuleika and Kevin McGinsky.
Yeah, cool. What are they doing?
Some Dada stuff.
Okay. So that's Thursday the 2nd after the Cube Tour.
£6 advance. You can get your tickets from the usual places, which is the Here Shop and Bristol Ticket Shop.
Marvellous.
Nanoplex are doing a Scratch Day, which is it's a programming language to get kids kind of coding or parents and kids. Looks quite interesting. You can look that up online as well. I think it's an open source sort of flash type thing. The website's quite nice. There's lots of sort of games that have been made by kids and stuff. It's sort of quite sweet.
Nice.
That's Sunday the 12th. It's 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. It's £2. Adults are free entry with a child. Suitable for 5 and up. Do you want to talk about Blue Screen Day?
I do, but I don't know when it is. So.
It's the 15th. Wednesday the 15th of May.
So, it's open screening. It's Bristol's longest running open screening. It runs about every 2 months. People bring films down, short films up to 20 minutes in length. If you've got something that's just over, then drop us an email. We'll consider it. It's a bit tricky because sometimes... They can be quite long nights if we have a lot of films, because we never know in advance how many we're going to get. But yeah, so if you've made a film and it's less than 20 minutes in length, then bring it down and we'll screen it. First come, first serve. Doors open at 8.
Yes.
Films usually get on about 8:30, 8:45 once we've managed to sort them all out. If you've made a film, you can come in for free. But if there's 10 of you, only one of you can come in for free, because otherwise we wouldn't be letting everyone in for free.
Regular folk, you can get in for £3 full price or £2 concession.
Yeah, it's super cheap. So.
And it's really good, because some of the films are really high quality and you don't get to really see them anywhere else. And people might eventually put them on YouTube, but you get to see something that's really good and sometimes does go to festivals and things really early.
Yeah, so...
it's the experience of being... Seeing them with an audience is a crucial thing now.
Yeah.
Now, because there is YouTube and so on.
Yeah.
Blue Screen started, there wasn't, those kind of video sharing sites. But the kind of obviously, when you watch it with an audience, you just get, it's a totally different experience and it's really valuable.
So yeah, so that's the other thing. We have the Cube Orchestra usually rescore if they're around, because they practice on Wednesdays, so you usually get to see that. So I guess some other bits that are worth saying about Blue Screen. It's best if you can get your film rendered onto a DVD because it's the most reliable format that we can play. We can obviously definitely play it. Otherwise, we can play most things. We can play VHS. If you've just recorded it on a DV cam, you can take the tape out, pop it in here, and we can play that. We can play Blu-ray. We can play most... video files, we do sometimes struggle with things if they're formatted for Mac, because we've got a PC-based system. So if you're making films out there and you want to bring one down, if it's a Mac formatted hard drive, we might have a bit of a problem with it, but otherwise we're... Yeah, so it's great, and like you were saying, it's really good. It's really good for an audience member, because the standard of film, I think, is really, really high, and I think that's... If you've never been to something like that before, ever, then you'll be blown away by the quality of that people are making. And if you're a filmmaker, like David was saying, it's great to see it with an audience, and also you're in an audience of other filmmakers, so it's good to make contacts and talk to people about your next project and their next projects and share information and stuff. So it's just a really nice evening. So yeah, Wednesday the 15th.
And it's May, and there's Mayfest as well, with the various events. Lena, who does the live art, is putting on a piece called Amusements by the Sleepwalk Collective, who are an award-winning live art experimental group from UK and Spain. And this particular piece has been nominated for a couple of awards from Total Theatre and Arches Brick Award. It's described by the stage as hauntingly gripping, awe-inspiring, and sexually charged. Sounds pretty good. It's kind of an immersive piece. It's 45 minutes long, and it's shown for 2 nights.
Yeah, so it's over, it's over the weekend, so you've got it on Friday the 17th, and then you've also got it on Saturday the 18th.
Nice. How much is
and
it?
The price is to be confirmed, so keep your eyes peeled.
Cool.
And also, the kind of wrap party for Mayfest is happening here with the end of the Heatsick residency.
Okay.
Which is quite exciting. So Heatsick is this guy. It's sort of based on house music. Kind of weird take on it, but as far as I can tell, he's going to be taking over the building, going, like, changing how you look at the building, and people will be coming in a different entrance and stuff like that. There might be some physical reconfiguration and stuff like that. I'm not sure of the detail. If you go to Q Junction's website, there will be more specific details. But quite an exciting thing, kind of following on from Grouper would have been the last one.
Yeah, and the mural looks beautiful.
Yeah, it does, yeah.
Mayfest closing party extended play the Cube of Heatsick is the 26th of May, which is a Sunday, and it's at 8 o'clock.
We'll be right back. man, DDT was so convulsive.
Looks like to be a good month.
So towards the end of May we have a run of Place Beyond the Pines, which is Derek C. and France's follow up to Blue Valentine, which was one of my favourite films of 2010, I reckon, maybe 2009, probably 2010. It's got Man of the Moment, Ryan Gosling in it, and Eva Mendes. There was a really good interview, or somebody talking about an interview with Eva Mendes recently, in which she was discussing her move from kind of starlet type roles, where she was very much kind of playing eye candy, where she decided a few years ago that she'd had enough of that. And apparently she kind of sat down and decided that she wanted to work with auteur directors and couldn't work out why she wasn't working with auteur directors, and decided that she was going to very much avoid doing
Things
anything...
like Hitch. That rubbish.
Exactly. Changed the way she was looking at her career, and now she is kind of working with those people, which is quite interesting. I think she said she wanted to work with Mike Lee, and she was kind of plotting a career towards him by taking these roles as sort of stepping stones. Really interesting interview, anyway. But so they're in Place Beyond the Pines, which is. I guess people are going to compare it to Drive, which is maybe a bit weird because it's got the same guy in it, but it's not made by the same director or any of the same people. But there are some similar themes. So he's kind of a
anti-hero.
Yeah, he's a stunt driver, which is kind of a stunt man.
He's a stunt driver, and he's trying to. He's funding. Well, he robs banks to pay for his son's upkeep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very much about paternity and stuff like that, isn't it, really? So, but I guess, people will compare it to Drive, inevitably. But, showing it the other month, really good, interesting film. It's Monday the 27th, Tuesday the 28th, and Wednesday the 29th. And, there's a baby cinema on the Wednesday, so that's a good film run.
Bring your baby, your own baby. Don't take someone else's.
Yeah, don't take anybody else's baby.
But people can come if they don't have a baby, too.
Yeah, but you won't be able to leave with one. If you don't come with one, you can't leave with one.
So. You've got to leave with the same one.
Yeah, we're very strict about that sort of thing.
Don't steal babies.
Don't steal babies.
It's bad.
I don't know... if either of you knew James Marriott, who's a friend of some volunteers who sadly died last year, he was quite young, 39, he's an author of books on horror cinema. He co-wrote one with Kim Newman and called Horror, The Definitive Guide to the Cinema of Fear. And his last book, which he finished sort of days before his death, was about Descent, the film Descent, which... we're having a book launch of the book that he wrote about Descent, and also showing the film Descent, which is an all-female caving thriller. And I don't know, do you want to say anything about the film?
Neil Marshall, second film after Dog Soldiers, I think. I know I know some people who hate it, and I know some people who love it. It's a, yeah. I guess it's, so Neil Marshall's a British director, he's from Gateshead, I think, and he kind of makes, I guess, low-budget genre horror films, you would say, but this has got partial American cast, if I remember rightly. It's been a long time since we've seen it.
Bless you.
And it's kind of, so it's about claustrophobia and, so, as you said, a group of women go into the woods and go caving, yeah. and things go horribly wrong, and there's some nasty stuff down there, and I won't really say any more than that, but if you're claustrophobic and you're scared of small dark places, then this is the film for you, because you're going to get really terrified. But yeah, it's a good film, I think.
And on a similar theme, Hellfire's showing The Pit, which is from 1981,
as a Canadian kind of horror
midnight movie. Yeah, I watched the trailer of this, and it looks very kind of weird, cheeseball. In the notes there, it says it's like the Brady Bunch.
Okay.
It's kind of kids who find these sort of troglodytes, sort of cave-dwelling monsters.
Okay.
And yeah, I think it looks a perfect sort of midnight movie. Mm.
So that's Friday the 21st. The doors are going to be opening at 10:30, and there's going to be music, bar, DJ, all that kind of thing. And the film starts at 12 midnight sharp, and it is free. Okay. So that's pretty cool.
So I'm guessing that can't. So that sort of follows on from The Descent. It's almost like a double bill, then, isn't it? Really, because they both. It sounds like
it's
very
themed,
much
it's themed
each other.
About the subterranean thing. Yeah. I guess. Yeah.
All right, then.
What a marvellous month we have.
Shall we wrap up? That's plenty to be going on with. It's a good month. So
I need to pee, so yeah.
Let's say goodbye, then.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Goodbye, then. Bye.